Okay, you guys, today we are talking about an awesome topic, which is how to film and record your lines for parkour on social media or just when you're creating content. We have the light and fun intro topics of censorship in social media. What should be censored? Do we even want any censorship? A little bit, censorship light, censorship a lot. Do you understand? The dark place that you're going into, if you have no censorship. And then quick parkour insurance tips.
Oh, you threw that one in there.
I'm throwing it in.
He really wants parkour people to know about it.
I really want to know. They don't get it anyway. It's not happening. All that excellent advice, insight, and mentorship in this episode of The Outrun Show.
A silent intro.
You like a silent intro?
That was the first time we've ever done it without any sound effects.
It stayed pretty quiet. That's what I was betting on. I'm like, hope this doesn't get loud right now.
All right, so let's start. We'll go in reverse order. Knock out your insurance tips.
Okay, knock out insurance tips. All right, so first of all, anybody who thinks that they don't need insurance, it's really a question of how painful you want it to be when something happens to you and you actually go to the hospital or need medical care. The people who are like, I eat granola and do back squats, I'm all good. You know,
that's not how it works.
That's not really how it works. It's risk also mitigation.
Not why, yeah, it's also not why insurance exists.
Right. What is, who is it? Chris Rock said. Chris Rock said insurance is really just in case crap happens, but he used a different word. That's all it really is. And that's true. So I had cancer at 19, was an athlete. Was, you know, otherwise healthy, seemingly. It was genetic. Maybe some environmental trigger. Maybe too many chicken nuggets or something one day. And just did it.
Not everybody's built for chicken nuggets.
Dude. Nope. You're going to find out real quick.
No one's built for chicken nuggets.
That chicken nugget cancer.
I don't care if they're labeled boneless chicken wings, all right? They're still not made for you to eat.
Ooh.
We'll talk about this later.
Okay, we'll circle back on chicken nuggets as always. Okay, so real quick, my advice on that as someone who's been training and for a long time and being, you know, mildly injured and going through terrible illness is that you should probably have some sort of insurance. If you know, on the market, you can get like basic, you know, you won't go bankrupt or whatever insurance for like, you know, $80 a month or something like that. But I think what people might be interested in is talking about the type of insurance that covers USPK has. If you join, you can qualify for their individual athlete insurance. And that's a type of, there's an insurance in there that's a type of liability insurance for training and whatnot. That's very cheap.
We're talking for individuals.
Yeah, it's for individuals. Individual. Yeah.
That's if you're like out and about, trip and fall, training parkour at some spot.
And that, and I don't think this is not health insurance. This is, you know, liability insurance, right? Yeah. So that's cool. You can do that. That's an easy way. That's like $7 or $14 or something like that. But then what if you get injured? So there's other ways. You don't need, like most people, if you aren't, for lack of a term, if you don't have a net worth or that net worth is negative, then you may not need some catastrophic insurance. You can also get the accident insurance, and that pays out small monthly fees. Usually these plans are like $14 to $40 a month or something like that, and they pay out based off an injury. So if you go out and you're training in a park and you sprain your ankle, you think it might be broken, you want to continue to move for the rest of your life, so you want to take care of it, right? You can go to the doctor and then file a claim with these types of insurance. These are called accident insurance policies, and they will pay you a fixed dollar amount. They have a rate sheet on there for the injury. So if you need an x-ray, they just have a flat coverage of $300 for x-ray. If you go and you find some chiropractor to do it for $50 or for free or whatever, you still file a claim, you get the $300. All right, that's the type of insurance that I think really everybody should have unless they're on their like parents insurance or something like that. And even then, you might have a high deductible or copay. So
I think the big thing, well, that one is a cash payout.
Yes, that's a cash payout.
It's not It's not like you covered. Have to jump through any loopholes. It's just you get the money, which is nice.
You also need to pay it at the time of.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I usually. Yeah, I had to pay it, and then you get a reimbursement back.
You also have a direct to provider insurance, which is a monthly fee, like a subscription you would pay certain doctors, and they just cover stuff like that, like basic accident stuff. Like if you need to be seen.
Still on accident insurance.
No, this is actually like go to a provider and they just have subscriptions.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So that's another type. So if you're like, well, I could afford $100 in insurance, then you could probably find somebody who would take $100 a month that's a provider that'll help you if you just to avoid doctor avoidance, right? If you're one of those athletes that's in the doctor every
6 months
or month or whatever, then yeah, maybe that's a good plan. And then they know who you are.
Yeah. But I think the big thing with insurance for parkour athletes is that a lot of parkour athletes don't visit a doctor because they can't afford it, right? Yeah. Or they think they can't afford it. And that's kind of where like insurance slides in, is it's like, look, up for now, this is the only body you get. You don't get another one. Mm-hmm. So being like, oh, I think I might have broke my ankle, I'll just stay home and watch Netflix for a couple of days and then I'll go yeet myself off a roof. Like, that's not a viable long-term strategy. So insurance fills the gaps so that you can actually take care of yourself so that you can be doing parkour longer, which is the goal.
Yeah. And so that's very manageable. There's your solutions there. We're not insurance advisors. Whatever disclaimer we need to make, this is what we do. We're not telling anybody to do anything.
It's true. We're just making suggestions as people who have been in the industry for a long time.
Yes. Make sure you always get along with your mom and stay on her health plan as long as possible.
You get till 26. Youngins, 26. So hopefully you can keep things nice with your parents till 26. Anyways, on to more jovial topics by a marginal degree.
Right.
Some quick censorship on social media.
So there's a lot of rage right now. Who's censoring social media? And I think there's two things that we should talk about. There's freedom of speech and freedom of reach, which is a recent topic. Freedom of speech versus freedom of reach. And what that basically means is there are a lot of people who maybe had large audiences and, you know, like your Alex Jones types or just like your fanatical internet conspiracy theorists. And they felt really bothered that they were not able to reach as many people on the large social networks and eventually were kicked off for violating their terms and conditions, right? So what people should understand, and from having a long history of advertising in the Facebook marketplace and on platforms and working for agencies in Silicon Valley, startups, blah, 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 I've seen the back end of this. And there's a lot more everyday people just getting the legs cut out from under them than someone as controversial as like an Alex Jones character. So Alex Jones is a fanatical conspiracy person on the internet. You know, there's people who don't know about it are looking at it and saying, hey, you know, I could see his topics are risque, but as freedom of speech goes, we should be able to say whatever and put it out there. But yeah, there's this whole background on the algorithm is, you know, it's not a chronological algorithm anymore. Mm-hmm. The algorithm picks based off what the interests of the platform are, meaning in their best interests. And that means that, you know, it's really not the situation where there's perception that if you have a huge following, you put something out, everybody's going to see it. No.
Especially if it's potentially divisive, right?
Yeah.
Like the last thing that a social media platform wants to do is split its demographics from everyone on the platform to a small margin of people, right? Like social media exists and thrives when it gets the diversest group of people that it can on that platform at the same time and catering to each of those. So if something that's super diversive or divisive, like, you know, political content, and suddenly people start to align that social platform with that political ideology, they leave.
Yeah, you
really. And that's the opposite of what that platform wants, right? So, yeah, some of those things, they're like, well, I'm not going to show Justin, or in my case, they're not going to show dog memes to me, because if I eventually associate Instagram with just a dog platform, I'm going to bounce, because I'm not a dog guy, right?
Right. And actually, you can tune pretty hard your even your Facebook algorithm. If you just know that the majority of algorithms are biasing engagement so much, that just means like, comment, click, you know, your and buy.
Engagement that's the things that you like, yeah.
Right. It really doesn't matter. What if you're exploring someone else's ideas, you're going to get more of that, basically. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is you can actually communicate someone with the algorithm, especially on like Facebook. Where you know, it's just one of those like, don't engage, don't feed the trolls when it comes to a post that you don't want to see more of. And there's actually a more button where you can click and see less posts like this. They give you the option to deter it. Yeah. I had mine tuned about 6 months ago before I was, you know, sucked into election stuff. Yeah. So finally that I remember showing it to a friend who was like, they were like, well, let me see your Facebook feed. And I'm like, oh, sure. I mean, if you want to really see what you've been clicking on, show somebody your Facebook feed or social media feed. And they looked at it, there was like, there's no news on here. There's nothing. It's just a bunch of people flipping on stuff and advice from like, you know, entrepreneurs. And like, that was it. And I was like, yeah, that's why I'm not going crazy right now. Right. And sure enough, I think maybe just letting that person touch my phone, you know, 2 weeks later, it's just, it's gone. I don't know. It was the proximity alert, right? Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I stay away from any of the curated feeds that like, because when I'm scrolling through those things, I know it's tracking how long I'm looking at the photo, which ones I opened, and there's times where I'll just click random things because I just hate it when things are trying to curate things for me, because there's the not interested option, and I've used that before, and sometimes it doesn't work. It almost gives it to me more when I say I'm not interested
in
it.
Like, oh, really? Interactive.
Yes.
Oh.
And it's so, and that's Instagram. That was the one I've had the worst time with. And of course, it's like hidden behind two, you know, menus to get to not interested. TikTok, I think, is the one that I have to limit myself. TikTok is so easy to scroll forever on. And and their interface is actually, I feel like it, I don't know where the menu changes, but it feels like it changes for me. I'm that old on TikTok. But TikTok is just because it's going one at a time, it can generate the image right next as you're swiping. It can give you something that that you're gonna be, you know, yeah, spending like just another second on.
Instagram is like the video, text and gap, right? So you have almost a full screen moment where there's just text and just likes and comments before the next one comes in, unless you're on the explore feed, like watching reels or whatever it is. But yeah, TikTok's super engaging.
It's super. So I TikTok is the one I have to limit quite a bit because it just, it's too good. Mm-hmm. But, and then again, if you spend too long on something where you're just curious about it, where I'm like, okay, let me listen to this, you know, this conspiracy theory, just 2 seconds longer than I should have, and now my whole page is listed with it, and to remove that from the feed is just such a task that so I just stay away from the For You pages on the social media as much as I can, and stick to my home page, which is I can directly control by unfollowing and following people. Mm-hmm. and so those are for the main ones. That's Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok right now. But I feel like Reddit is my more favorite one, because obviously Reddit has censorship. It's gotten, you know, their subreddits have gotten deleted for, what is that? Promoting violence. But the best thing about Reddit that I like is that there's an upvote and a downvote system where the people choose what moves to the top, right? The majority of people in that community choose what gets seen and what gets put up at the top of the feed and what gets pushed all the way down. So if there is stuff that, you know, the majority of people know is fake or is indecent, it'll just get downvoted into the negatives, and it won't be, and you can just never see that.
Yeah, because Facebook doesn't really have a downvote.
No, none of the other features do. They have a like or nothing.
Reaction. You just have these weird reactions. So do you feel like that's a democratic way of handling this?
That's what it feels like to me. Reddit is more democratic, and I've written a couple articles on that where that was their inspiration. For that that system, upvote, downvote. So
I just think the categorization of the feed needs work. It's just like Reddit is such a hot mess on topics. I feel like, you know, you have to be in the know of your little subculture.
Yeah, you have to know it exists in order to get into it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you have to, they don't ever, they suggest some subreddits for you to follow, but they're always like very off the wall. And like, yep. if you're trying to find something very specific, like a parkour shoe Reddit, right? You'd have to search for that. Whereas the other social media platforms are going to do a better job of like, oh, this guy's into parkour. He might like the parkour, you know, r/parkour shoes, right? But Reddit's not so good at that. So yeah, it can be like really hard to break in to find like the subreddits to follow to curate your feed so that you are mm-hmm. seeing. Otherwise, you're just on the homepage, which is fun and silly, but is yeah. not at all catered to you. It's just catered towards the mass of people using Reddit at that time.
So what, comparatively speaking, what degree of censorship do you think is that Reddit is displaying that, you know, so I think the one thing we have to say is that if you're listening to this and you think you don't want censorship, you're wrong. I'm just going to go out and say it. You do want some censorship. You any teenage boy who's wandered into the dark alleys of the internet has realized, whoa, there are places on the internet.
The dark web? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about the dark web. Well, the dark web, we don't say that. I don't even know if I want that coming up in YouTube's like text search. Like, never been.
Not interested.
So the way that works is that there are servers that are like floating around out there in like Russia or something. And
well, don't explain it.
Yeah, just let it be. It was a joke. So what? I just wanted to sound ominous.
Let it be. Anyways, point being is you do want censorship.
Censorship!
Because the reality is that there's a lot of stuff out there that's just off the wall. It can be off the wall in a good way, but it's more often than not off the wall in a very bad or weird way. And that's just the way it is. So you want some sort of basic layer of censorship to keep these sorts of topics or these sorts of images or these sorts of subjects away from what you are trying to view.
Yeah, if anyone offers up to you, hey, I've got a platform, and don't worry, it's completely free speech. Like, we don't censor folks. They're either A, lying, or B, you don't want to be there.
Yes.
Yeah, because there's just no way to, I feel like, protect your emotional state when you have so little control over what's going to appear next. So that's always my biggest worry when I, if I have something that's just like free floating like that. So yeah, I could be watching puppies on 1 second and kittens begging for food. And then the next second it's just like, it's showing me some, you know, war torn country. And, yeah, it's good to get information from all around. I feel like people, there is that stigma where you're just like, everyone needs to have an equal chance in my bubble, and I need to like accept all of these influences from everywhere to make sure that I'm fair. But I just don't think that all of these informations are equal or as important or as beneficial to my life. So some things will make me happy, and then some things I need to set aside time to research.
Yeah, and I think too that sometimes it's, you should have the ability to dictate when you want to see those yep. things, right? And censorship, proper censorship on a platform looks like we will not show you potentially emotionally triggering things unless you're out there to search for them, yeah. right? So on Reddit, if you want to get into hardcore politics and conspiracy theories or whatever it may be, you can find a subreddit that covers that, mm-hmm. but you have to seek it out,
yep.
right? It exists. And it's moderated by other people who are also interested in that topic, which is the cool thing about Reddit, is that the censorship does happen on a global level, right? So mm-hmm. Reddit will censor, you know, illegal things.
Mm-hmm.
But also each subreddit has its own moderators who will censor things for you. So if we have a parkour shoe subreddit and somebody posts like, hey, check out this new shirt, the moderators would be like, well, we're a parkour shoe Reddit. That doesn't fit. So we're going to remove that, right? That's a proper censorship because it's not related to the topic. Yeah. But if I didn't want to see parkour shoes that day, I don't have to show up on the platform and it just shows up for me. True lack of censorship is like, you're just subject to the true randomness that is other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you should never subject yourself to the true randomness that is other people.
Not at that scale.
Not yeah. that scale.
Maybe,
yeah,
yeah sure. maybe with like friends and family, but mm-hmm. not with the millions of strangers on the internet.
Yeah, it gets pretty creepy pretty quick. And I think that one thing I want to call out is that we're talking about, you know, emotionally triggering people. Like, we're talking about, like, really raunchy or horrible stuff when we're talking about triggering. Not someone just with a different idea.
Yeah, not like, right. here's why you should vote on this. Yes, yeah. On this proposition. No, it's more like, you know,
here's
war-torn areas.
Right. Where, and you're just like, you know, what? You're going to run into that stuff. So if you're out there and you just think it's all, like you've been in the Facebook bubble of curation, even Facebook throws some rough stuff, especially if you get into their like video feed. I've fell into that before and been like, where am I? Am I still on the right side of Facebook? I'm in like a dark corner.
I don't know how Facebook's, but apparently the Facebook like moderators that when you upload content, mm-hmm. it, to train the algorithm, originally they had live people, right, that would watch that content, and then they would watch and they'd see, they'd be like, white dude doing parkour. That's the tags. And the mm-hmm. algorithm's like, got it, or the AI, right? Mm-hmm. And then they have to watch all this content to train it eventually. And apparently there was a big thing like maybe 6-7 years ago of those people just like having hardcore suicidal ideation or HI homicidal ideation because they just see so much of this like graphic content that people upload and they have to flag, right? But they have to watch it because they have to train the algorithm or the AI to be like, no, this is content that we don't. This is violent content or whatever it is, or this is, you know, sexual content that doesn't belong in this platform. Mm-hmm. And so they have to watch these things. And apparently those people had some
trauma,
pretty hardcore trauma from watching this stuff. So secondary trauma from watching mm-hmm. this stuff, which is, yeah. Speaking of trauma, today is Veterans Day. Us filming it, when it launches, it won't be Veterans Day.
Yeah.
So, cheers to those who served.
A shout out to them.
We recognize trauma as a real thing. Mm-hmm. It comes in all its forms. So, those moderators on Facebook, you also sacrificed for us. Not in the same way, but we recognize that like psychological trauma alone, you know, apart from
physical. Do you guys have veterans in your family at all?
Our grandpa.
Grandpa?
Vietnam.
Vietnam. Okay. All right. Yeah, that would be the same. I'm looking at you. Like,
you well, I guess from Lindsay's family.
They could have some. Her brother was a mechanic on helicopters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Logan.
Mm-hmm. Logan.
Yeah. And then we've had some enlisted folks as coaches before.
We have?
Yeah, Sean's enlisted.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think. Yeah. I can't think of. I'm trying to think of anybody else who's a coach.
If we forgot you, it's completely unintentional.
And then my
we still love you.
I had my grandparents and uncles of World War II and Vietnam, but that was a long time ago. So we haven't had any super recent service, I think.
Phil.
Yeah.
Phil, got you, Phil. He's back in town. We got you, Phil.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Shout out to Phil. And but I've definitely had military mentors in my life, and they've been amazing people. So, and friends as well. So,
yeah. Sorry, that was sidetrack. I just remember from this morning, though.
So you want to? The point is, you want a little bit of censorship. You don't want all the censorship. You know, it's. But to be honest,
I think as I said earlier, the sign of good censorship, proper censorship, is I personally am looking out to see this particular topic that may be contrary to my views, and the platform allows me to seek it out, but doesn't show it to me unbidden, right? It's not, I'm not on the platform and it's just like, boom, stuff that you disagree with, or boom, stuff you didn't want to see or this early in the morning, right? The platform has curated stuff for me that it knows that I like to see, but when I go out there and I'm like, okay, cool, I want to look at dog memes, which I never do, but maybe I do today, I should be able to find those things. Right? Improper censorship is when you try and break out of your bubble and the platform's like, nope, can't do it. It doesn't exist. It's not there. That's, I think, improper censorship.
Yeah, and just understand that going on a platform is like walking in the doors of someone else's business.
You are.
That's a company. They put out a platform. There's no, you know what I mean?
It's like, more or less,
they cut you.
They do their stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. You just stop acting like Facebook is democracy.
No, it's a private company, so they get to choose it.
And if you feel so bothered by what's on Facebook, my advice would be don't get on it. Don't be like, well, I'm looking for an alternative to Facebook. Like, no, Facebook is its own thing. It fills a space in the marketplace and has so many people on it. If it bothers you, I don't blame you at all for being like, nope, I'm out, and just like killing it or getting rid of it for a while. But good luck. Good luck with that. If you haven't watched what's the social media documentary? I feel like the news is a little late on my ears. I watched it
Social Dilemma on Netflix. Yeah.
Social Dilemma on Netflix. Worth watching if you're like, I don't know, or if you don't know those ideas, it's just worth watching. But yeah, I mean that.
I would like to point out that it's intentionally written, directed, and edited to be scary and kind of like, you know, to make you feel scared. So it's like, and it's not. That's again, it wants you to watch it. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to get people to watch things when you either make them angry, scared, mm-hmm. or happy, right? So it's not at all unbiased in its presentation.
But it is
very informative.
Yeah, I'd watch it as an exercise of self-awareness. Don't run like, oh my gosh, they're listening to me. I mean, they are. But
I mean, they are.
But they're not that interested, trust me. Okay, and our main topic for today...
Creating your own content.
So you can have it.
To post on your platform, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you can censor. You can do the work of censorship before you even post it by looking at your clips and being like, I don't like that, and not posting it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's censorship.
So last episode, we talked a little bit about what we liked in certain content, but let's talk about what we like to create and how we create it and get some tips.
Yes. I think for parkour, I think the starting point is that your videographer has to know parkour as well. Almost has to be better than you are.
I'd like to even go a half step before that and say, like, if you want to produce really great parkour content, you got to have a friend.
Yes.
You got to have a friend to film, because I do a lot of, I train alone a lot. So a lot of my stuff is like tripod, right? But, even just finding, like, I think I hijacked Justin's little, like, handheld thing that does a pan feature, which is super cool, by the way. If you're friendless or you don't care about that, you could buy some of those things.
Yeah.
And just that little, like, just a pan feature like this
will
do so much to improve the engagement of your content. People enjoy watching that. Like, if you watch a movie, there will never be a scene nowadays where the camera's not ever so slightly moving, even during still scenes, shifting, just because we know, as people, that... we're constantly moving, even when we talk to people, right? So that's just, it's just more natural. So yeah, half step, 0.5 step, like step 0.5, not step one, is like, you gotta have a friend or some sort of moving camera if you want really engaging content. And then step one is.
Yeah, I think having the friend, not only does it make the video itself look better, but the collaboration, when you have at least just one other person who is giving their, you know, their criticism and their feedback on the other side of the camera helps out quite a bit, because it's very easy to imagine your own move as how you would want to film it, and then you're performing it at the same time and you watch the video and there's that disconnect.
Yep.
Right? You thought you looked like something else. So it's good to hear someone, especially during filming and before filming and right after, you know, their suggestions and how to fix it. And if you're, you know, leg is isn't straight in the way that you want it, having the cameraman tell you at the point of or you know in game time during the filming, I think it's helpful.
It also just takes forever to like film a line by yourself, go back to your phone, pull it off the tripod, watch it, and be like, ah, dang it, I was scowling and I should have been smiling, or you know, I was looking in the wrong direction, and then you set it up and then you go, like, it's, whereas somebody who's filming it for you can just be like, oh, nope, what? Stop.
Yeah.
Stop scowling at me. And you're like, dang it, I was scowling. Okay, cool. Let's do it again, right? It saves you so much more time. So that's a benefit of having somebody film for you.
Do you think your facial hair helps to hide scowling or features that
absolutely
you don't want?
Absolutely.
Oh. He says, no. No, Colin, I just feel, says, like, I look maniacal.
If you have a beard, you automatically have a frown. That's just how it is.
What?
Yeah.
No.
You can't see it. You can't. And smile, like, even if you're smiling, your teeth are covered by
your
beard.
You might look a little more stoic, but I don't.
This guy's part of the anti-facial hair gang here.
I'm not anti for subreddit.
You haven't seen Colin on the camera, but he's got a big old beard. So
yeah. I just Colin definitely looks more like what I would expect, like an MMA like fighter to look like. So it's always like when he does parkour, I'm like, why is that MMA guy doing parkour?
Beard's a liability in MMA. Just like bite it.
Yeah, bite it. Having someone with you and then being able to view a really cool ability is the ability to view your content. Like when shooting with DSLR or higher end, you know, video equipment, it's always a pain when you have to have a little monitor. If you can have a little monitor, it's good. Otherwise, it's really small. It's hard to see. So one of our coaches got a little monitor for a gimbal recently, and it made filming, like, oh my gosh, so much better. Because you go back, and you're not, it's not two people trying to, like, you know, block out the block sun the or the sun, light, yeah. right, to see what's in the little monitor on the kit, on the device, finder. Right, the viewfinder on the device. But the little, like, I don't know, it was like a 5-inch by 8-inch monitor that just, you can just replay it right away and see if you got the shot or not. Things like adding motion and gimbals, which help to make the video look smooth and more natural and creates this sort of like seamless congruency across space. It's better than, like, you know, that shot that looks like someone, you know, running through the
Blair Witch adding style. Any the Blair Witch style will immediately up the quality. And it, and we're not only, tripod. Yeah, it, you get shown one over there. But yeah, adding a gimbal immediately improves it and also encourages your filmer to move with you. And that's why I think I like gimbals the most.
Because they can, right?
Because they can, right? Yeah, and so you're like, penalized if you're holding the phone with just your hands for moving. Mm-hmm. Because that stabilization is going to lose a lot of the audience.
This is DJI, which is a name brand. So, but there are definitely tons of like Chinese companies that do them a little cheaper. But essentially your phone would sit in here and this gimbal would stabilize the phone for you as you kind of run around. Yeah. Maybe throw the phone in there so we can demonstrate. But these things are, I mean, you can get them
100 from, to 200, pretty good quality.
Yeah, I mean, you can get a great quality. You probably get a like a real cheap, you know, basic one for $50 or something like that. But this, if you're filming with a friend, will go leagues in making your content look so much better. A gimbal, and the fact that like gimbals no longer cost $600 to get like a Ronin, you know, like this handheld one is such a basic mechanic now. I feel like drone tech and gimbal tech like kind of went up at the same time. Where when they started, they were so expensive, right? Mm-hmm. They were such niche markets, and they were like a thing that flies in films. And now you like you can find filming drones with a basic 720p camera on it mm-hmm. for $30 on Amazon, you know. So, yeah, so that's a really awesome invention.
We were doing gimbal follow shots in between 2012 and 2015.
Yeah, but we had a manual gimbal.
Yeah, glide cam back then.
Yeah,
weighted.
Those things were pain.
Yep,
very hard to set up. And now technology does so much of that for you. Just take advantage of it. Like I always say, I liken the having a friend to shoot for you as like the same thing as having a good coach to spot for you, or like if you're doing like boxing work, needing a good trainer who knows how to like hold mitts and pop 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 pop, call out your sequences and put you through. The better one you have, the better your content's gonna look. It actually might have more to do with the camera person than your actual ability, because I think a really good I think a really good camera
person. Who makes a better video, the athlete or the filmer?
The videographer.
Absolutely the videographer can make a very basic like line look
really
incredible.
Cool. Yep. Mm-hmm. I agree.
And but that's like, there's a, like a, you know, like there's a cross right there where like at some point, like the athlete can suck, but the videographer has to be like, oh, I've been working in like film and cinematography for 30 years now. He's like, I can make you picking your nose look good. Right. And in that case, great. You can do whatever you'd like. But there is like a sweet spot for most parkour athletes where it can't just be some kid off the street who's used a gimbal one time. And you can't just be a walk off the curb parkour athlete.
Yeah.
You, both of you need to have some skills. Right. But yeah, just know that like, if you had to bias anywhere, pick a videographer that has more skill in videography than you have in parkour, and you will have amazing content.
And if you want to create content, I would say, you know, pick working with someone that knows your style, that you guys can work together. Like you shouldn't be like, let's go out and train, and then you spend no time working on videography. And it's like trade back and forth, and then give each other feedback. Like, oh, I like when you move like this. There's some other things that I think are very good basics, which just have to do with cinematography, videography, and photography in theory, and that is angles and positions. So the advice I would give is that most things are going to look better from like either like you get to pick your type of view, but I think a child's view in videography or photography is when you're looking from the ground up at the person. I think that's going to look better a lot of times. It's going to show off height in your jumps. I have so many shots that I've did even with still I've gotten with a wide angle lens on an iPhone, which is enough technology for most people.
Yep.
A wide angle on the iPhone. And my jumps just look so small. Like I've got stuff that's like literally on my TikTok right now that I just dropped where I was like, that's 8 feet, right? And it looks like it's a foot and a half on the video. And so there's different things and angles and approaches you can take to make things look bigger. Understand those wide angle lenses tend to compress what's on the outside and then expand what's in the middle. So
we used to joke when we'd film with Ryan that because back then we were on like a little handheld like camcorder and you'd attach a fisheye lens to the front of it, like mm-hmm. physically screwed on there. And we used to joke because on camera, all the jumps on just standard, you know, your regular 4x3 or 16x9 as it became your ratios, right? On just flat, it was like the camera made jumps look smaller. And then you talked to the fisheye on, and now the jump looks like it should.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah. If you're in the middle, that is, if you start moving towards the periphery.
Yeah.
But that would be a tip that I toss out too, is if you don't have a wide angle lens, get one.
Yeah.
That is an absolute game changer. You know, I think it's iPhone 11 and up now have the wide angle. I know that like Samsung's had it for a little while. You could go with your more like Chinese manufacturers like Huawei. They like if you have a cell phone and it has a wide angle lens, you're going to be pretty good because that wide angle lens is just going to give you more room to play with in terms of your angles.
Mm-hmm.
If you have just standard.
And you can fit so much in. Like to get, if you're shooting with your cell phone, even if it's a decent phone, you're coming back so far. But that wide angle feature in those devices is allowing you to be essentially like 6 or 8 feet in front of you, which would be way too tight in the past, and actually get your full line in that. So that's a really good hack. The other one I want to talk about.
Wide angle, we can go forever. When I think about my first journey with wide angle, the reason I love wide angle is because you can get as close to the person as you need to get the more defining shots, the more stylistic shots.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the wide angle, you have to be, you know, 10 feet away from the person to film their entire movement and the obstacle that they're jumping from and to. And when you do that, it's very easy to make jumps look small. And that's why I feel like a pro athlete can look like just a regular old beginner athlete if you're filming from far away and you're just using a typical lens. So there's that problem you can run into. But when you put wide angle, you're up close in front of the or right next to the person, and you can track certain movements that you think are going to give the biggest impression for. So I always think of when I'm filming like the wide angle, I think face zoom and TikTok is like one of the biggest like or easier ways to visualize this. And it tracks the movement and anything, expression that goes, you know, outside that's dramatic, it tracks and it follows it. And as a wide angle filmer, that's what your goal, your job is. When someone's leg sticks out and is doing a fancier kick, or when someone's in a liche and they reach their legs out, the job of the wide angle is that you can get in close and you can really zoom in on that and follow through.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with a traditional lens because it's just so far away. If you move it, you're just, you know, it's just like you're panning, right?
It's so, Jason Bourne.
Yes. Yeah. So wide angle lets you do that. And that's the coolest part. And when I think about the first time I found this out, was when we it's my like very first parkour video. Jesse's filming it for me, and he gets so close that he kicks the camera, or I kick the camera out of his hands. And I think at that moment we realized how cool it is to have the action like almost reach through the camera and affect your viewing experience in that way. And ever since then, I feel like we've always been like just getting as close as we can to mm-hmm. whoever yep. we're filming. Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time. You always run into the person when you get that close, but there's just more, I don't know, there's an exciting play between the cameraman and the athlete that's being filmed when mm-hmm. it's, when the relationship is that close.
And there is that like element of trust. Like it is a skill. Again, it's like, it's just like holding mitts for people. Like you're getting really close to the punch and you have to know. And that's why having somebody who's not just sort of staring at the camera oblivious. I keep thinking of that like video that I saw on TikTok where the guy is trying to shoot this running stallion with a drone and he's got his headset on. He's standing in the field and he sees he's panning around the horse and his like drone like cuts the horse off. So the horse just like veers in it to the right. and just cram, just like slams him, like right. He's got his head set on. He's like his fingers, and all of a sudden, boom! He just hits him at his big black stallion, just like wrecks him, and his gear like busts in half. And I was like, man, you gotta be in touch, like,
yeah,
like that's just some guy, you know, flying around a stallion with a drone. Like you have to be a good athlete to do this. And I remember we used to create so much cool footage. Some of it never released. When even, you know, we're talking eight years ago now, you know, so, you know, 6 to 8 years ago, where we would run behind with cameras and capture really amazing shots.
Well, yeah, I think a good example, Michael just posted a line that Colin and David ran, where the three of them are running from the garage doors across the gym.
Yeah, Coach Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Michael had posted that and had like tagged me because I had filmed it, and I totally forgot that I had filmed it. But yeah, I have a gimbal and I'm running essentially along. If anybody knows the gym, we have a section where it's just like thin walls and then it goes to rails. And there's like a couple of platforms. But for the most part, you have to be pretty precise with your steps. And I'm filming it running and like doing these strides behind them. Right. And the fact that because I've done those strides 1,000 times, it makes no difference for me if I'm doing them with or without a gimbal. But if you watch the clip, you cannot tell. Like, you cannot tell that like I was jumping over these gaps and running across like a rail for a little bit. Right. And the line looks so cool. I love that line, even though nothing in the line other than, I guess, your guys' coordinating of not running into each other. But like nothing in the line is like, oh my gosh, world shattering, so cool. But because they're flowing through this and the camera's flowing with them, the clip looks really awesome.
Yeah, it feels like you're right behind them doing the movement, which it feels like that because you are doing that and you're looking through, you know, the lens. Or you're looking.
Somebody doing that.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that actually works a little better than, we can talk for a second about POV stuff. But before that, I want to say that I think positionally, it is better to figure that out, because a lot of gimbal follow just turns into gimbal chase, right?
Yep.
Like if you like, sometimes when I shoot, I need a direct path where I can sprint because athletes are so fast. We were shooting a line a couple months ago and I was trying to stay ahead of the person. So I needed flat ground and then to have my line carved out as the operator of the camera and then know, okay, I kind of know where he is out of my periphery, so I'm just gonna hold the camera at him, and then I have to run my line and pay attention so that I can get ahead of him, because I wanna start out in front, I wanna let him pass, and then I wanna get back in front at the end of it. So you have to beat him as the, because they're focusing on their line, right?
Yeah.
And so you can do things like throw in, well, something to slow him down. Like for me, I just like, we were having trouble with that, so I was like, hey, we just throw in like a little like wall flip here. And then that's going to give me enough time to get back in front of you while you're doing that technique. So boom, while he's landing and resetting, I'm like, oh, you know, just scampering in front to get in the front.
It's a relationship, the athlete and the videographer. And when you're making a line for the athlete, you're making two lines.
That's
a really good way to put
that's
it.
A good point.
The videographer has to have a line too. And I think really good videographers know instinctually what the view is of the lens, right? So they can hold the camera while focusing on their footwork. But for anybody that's not a professional videographer and has been doing it for decades, please watch the viewfinder, because nothing's more frustrating as an athlete as hitting a perfect line only to find that the videographer was so focused on his or her footwork that they cut you off because they're focused and they're doing this, right? And of course we want them to be safe. I'm not saying sacrifice yourself, but you need to know your line well enough as a videographer to be able to do that while watching the viewfinder and just using your periphery to navigate that up until some point where you've done it so many times that you're like, okay, cool. I know what the length, what the frame is. So I can run and just hold the camera here while I'm, you know, running this way. And I know that that person's in the clip.
Yeah. I think
a lot of relationships have been broken.
Oh yeah. I think as advice from an athlete, don't do something that you can't repeat. If your cameraman makes a mistake.
Yep.
If you are doing something where it's like, I can only hit this 1 out of 10 times, you shouldn't be asking other people to film that for you in such a stressful environment.
That's a tripod moment.
Yep. That's a progressional video. where, yeah, we're just, you got 10 videos on Instagram, 9 of them are failures. Yeah. But if you have someone chasing you and they're putting, you know, a little bit of their health at risk, then it needs to be a line that you can do perfect, you know, 3 out of 3 times. So that, because it's stressful being a cameraman. Like, I've been the one where they're doing their perfect line and I miss the perfect shot. And it is like, it is a guilty feeling when you're like, they're never going to do that movement again in their entire life. And I just missed it. Like, I didn't capture that.
So this is a good idea to have just like the tripod running. So we did save that one time because Olaf did that gainer off the roof, which was 20 some feet onto the mat. And just, Erica knew he was doing something squirrely. You had the glide cam and started recording just shy, or he was in, it was dark and so he was out of the frame, or I can't remember what happened.
Oh, I thought he was just jumping down.
Right.
And so I dropped the camera to follow him, right? And he went up because he did a gainer.
Yeah.
And so I only captured the last like 10% of that gainer.
But I had,
you can see this video, by the way, it's Orbit Vibes.
The Orbit Vibes video. But it doesn't look as good because it's not the glide, but I had my phone on wide angle running on tripod in the background. So it was still fully captured. Yep. With even you in it. And sometimes that's cool. So if you have the bandwidth for it, always just having a wide angle camera in the background shooting what's being shot. And we haven't shared a lot of that, but we started doing that when Michael and I were shooting a couple months ago, and some of that content never got out just because that's who we are. Sorry, guys. We're focused on the gym right now. we would just literally set the tripod up, hit record, and then record our lines, because I thought it'd be cool to like just splice in, you know, here's the run, you can see that the cameraman's involved, and then you see the full shot, right?
Yep.
Like that. And then if there's bails, you get those too. Because sometimes the cameraman bail is a pretty entertaining bail.
Because it's always like, it's like the guy holding his beer while he's doing flips or falling into the pool. It's like,
yeah, he's like,
he's like protect your camera.
It reminds me of Justin had this. We had this clip on the security camera where he was walking to answer some question for a...
With the laptop.
Yeah, his laptop held drinks at a bar, right? Like a waiter reading his laptop, trips over a ground rail, does a little shoulder roll, and then just like a drink or a pizza just flips it underneath his arm and then just keeps on walking.
And he's like,
yeah. And you can see the parent in the background was just like, ooh, X Games. Right. So that would have been a great TikTok there. So so much fun.
Yeah. Partnering on that, it's super important to have some grace for your videographer and as a videographer for your athlete, right? So like as an athlete, know that your videographer is doing something that if done right, goes on your feed pretty much forever. So they want to try and get it to look right. They're trying to get good angles. They're learning at the same time, right? And so if they cut you out of frame or they don't get an angle, let them know and be graceful if they're like, I don't think I can do that, right? Sometimes they get the line of like, oh, somebody's jumping to a precision and you want to zoom in on the feet because they're landing on something super narrow, but then you want to zoom out immediately so that they can hit this big plyo that's right after. Like sometimes your cameraman just literally can't move that fast, right? And that's where like your really high-end DSLRs can, because you can zoom in and then zoom out without the cameraman having to physically be there. So just have some grace and be realistic about like your videographer is not in a helicopter with a Red Bull budget.
Right.
So like sometimes they just can't get those angles and you know, you guys work together to find something. And as a videographer, please, please be graceful of your athlete, because they're going to probably maybe 3 times ever have I thought of a line and then hit it in the first 3 attempts, right? Where I was like, that's good. As a videographer, like, know that your athlete's going to have to do it 5 times, you know, and they're going to mess up in there and it's going to feel kind of boring sometimes and they're going to walk through, and just be patient because it's a lot of effort. They're trying to film something that most likely is their 80% output. So 80% output 5 times in a row is a lot of work that they're doing, especially if the line is like 20 to 30 seconds long. Whew.
Man, you don't be doing 20 to 30 second long lines.
unless your rapport with your videographer is quite high.
That's a great mistake that I want to talk about, because when you go and you want to film a line, like there, if you can be a videographer who respects the the time of others, then that's really good too. Because sometimes you need to be a bit of a producer and director, mm-hmm. or director rather. But you need to come in and you say, hey, all right, you guys, everybody's coming in. We got three people. I need a line from you in, you know, 10 minutes. People don't like this, but if you're trying to actually produce content, it's got to happen this way. Yep. And it may take them a half an hour, but because you said 10, they were crunching a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. And so to get the content out, otherwise you'll find yourself, and this is fine sometimes too, is coming in and working with three people and maybe getting one line out of it at best, and you spent 3 hours and you give up. It's just not a cadence that is productive. And as you get older, you get more worried about that. When I first started training with you guys, every time I went out, I was like, I want content. And you guys are like, that's not how it happens. Yeah. Don't force it. I'm like, I have a child.
I don't. Yep. Yeah. I understand that now. Because before, there was a really big debate amongst the Apex Pro team where it was like, a lot of us just wanted to train and have a good time. And yep. then Ryan was like, no, we need content. And there was always this like fight where it was like, I feel pressured every time I'm with you guys to make something incredibly impressive, and I can't do that, you know, every week and go as big, because I mean, we're all going so big. We're always trying to do something that outperformed the last week, right? So that gets very stressful. So yeah.
But then
I just feel like that when your standards are that high, your expectations are that high, it gets very frustrating. I think that's where Jesse and I might have been coming from. Whereas you're just like, I just need to capture this moment.
Yeah, I was coming up on like 30, or had just turned 30, and I was like, I just want proof this happened,
yeah.
right? Like, that's really what I wanted at that moment, was like, hey, let's just make sure if something happens, I want to know that I did something. And I think that, you know, for me, everything I was doing, even at that age, and even now I feel a little more controlled, felt like a big enough risk that I wouldn't, for safety reasons, maybe want to try it again. And so I felt like I wanted more recorded and captured. I think that if you are someone, this is a great point that I think people should soak up. If you are someone who was a pretty good athlete, but maybe feel like you don't want that type of pressure or intensity anymore, videography, shooting might be better for you. Let someone else be the person who is going to take, you know, to push those limits. But that person still needs somebody who can keep up with them.
Yeah.
And with a camera, nonetheless. Yeah.
And your experience will most certainly pay off for them if you're helping direct it. For sure.
Yeah. So I think more people who are sort of falling out of that level of intensity, a good place for them is in videography, mm-hmm. because it is really hard to get somebody. Again, this is back to like boxing. You know, a lot of people who fought become really awesome mitt holders, right? It's like you have to have that experience. What else can you do as a videographer to make better parkour cinema? I think is to break down and look at other cinema that you like. So go and watching films and trying to recreate a similar feeling. Like, I think sometimes people are just like, does the person in frame, you know, study some videography, study photography and angles and learn some rules and proportions, because there's a lot you can do just with a little bit of technique. And sometimes when you're trying to place an emphasis on perhaps a stick or a takeoff or tell the story of congruency, meaning like, how did a person get from, you know, the ground to two strides, a plyo, a cat back, pre, might not be one shot. Now, there's been a debate. Should it all be in one shot, right? When is, you know, what are the benefits? Let's talk about the benefits of withdrawals of balls. Because I don't think that there is like a fixed rule on that.
Oh, really?
No.
I feel like it's fixed.
You feel like feel it's like you feel like it always has to be one shot, huh? I can think of some exceptions. I'll battle you on this. I've got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, obviously there's environmental boundaries where it just can't be done in one shot, but in terms of Instagram format, I don't think your videos or your clips need to be longer than that, so long that you have to dice it up.
I'm just saying one line. I'm saying a line that's got maybe a couple strides like that, like a plyo, a cat back pre. Yeah,
I feel like this, maybe three or five I feel moves. Like in the community this is settled where it has to be one shot.
Really?
Yes. But
I don't think it's settled.
Yeah, I'll let you.
So I think that if the emphasis is the emphatic moment, right, the hard move, the big move, the move you want the attention on, if that's one shot, the line can be broken up. Meaning, if I want to record the run up to the line separately, if I want to record the initial takeoff separately, and maybe even show both, that's Jackie Chan style. like Jackie Chan movies back in the day when they would shoot, is they, if he did a big stunt, they would show it to you three times.
Yes.
Because they want to emphasize, this is where he fell through the thing, this is where he fell through the thing, and this is where he fell through the thing.
Yep.
So you get it. That's a little different if we parse up that shot, but I think that it can be more impactful, especially even if maybe that landing, like let's say it's a big jump and you see you do see the full takeoff, but the landing is shown and to be the original cliff as separate. I think it can work. I think it can have more of an impact than just showing the frame in once, or even just the follow in one.
Okay.
In
one I shot. See what you're saying. So as long as the if you're filming, you have multiple cameras filming the same scene.
Mm-hmm. Could be multiple, or it okay. could be, or it could, the run up could have been one of the attempts, but it's like not impactful on it. I don't
know. No, yeah, I think if you have one line, so you know you have three moves that are done consecutively, and you have a cut anywhere in between those three moves, the assumption is you didn't do it in one go. That's when I watch something, that's how it is.
I think there's some like authenticity that needs, that a single continuous clip shows. And that's why I think the community likes it, because when I can see you run, hit this jump, plyo, cat back to a pre, front flip, you know, and then cart full out of that, like all in one line, I'm like, that dude clearly hit all of those in the same line.
Yeah.
But if there was a split, like he hit the pre and then it zoomed in on him hitting the pre and then it would cut to another clip of him and the cat, right? Even though I can maybe make a jump, right? Like an assumption that he or she has the skills to do those in one line.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it, so it's not as like powerful to me. That being said, I think you're talking more about like cutting the clips for emphasis on a singular move. The move itself, so maybe we'll shorten that, the cat back pre to front flip cart full is still one line, but the run up to that cat is maybe a different
clip. That's what I'm saying. Could be. Because no one cares about that run up unless it's the run up for the roof gap.
Yeah.
That you probably need to see. You know?
Yeah, that reminds me of like descents. Like where what you're doing on top of whatever it isn't as important as how you're getting down, and that scene of you going down and making sure that whole thing fit, that clip is important to have broken. But then what you're doing afterwards or how you got into that.
Yeah, is okay, right?
Or even just the first little flip over.
That's where, like, I guess maybe your cinematography comes in, and that, like, you can use those moments to build up the singular clip, right? Mm-hmm. So before that clip happens, you can have some, like, you know, your athlete standing on top, like, or looking over the edge, right? Or the build up to it, and that adds some sort of like anticipation to that singular clip.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think like the highlight move or moves, the line itself, always got to be a single clip. You can't break it up. Obviously, like film is a dynamic art, and it changes as people, you know, change. But right now, it's just not authentic to cut it in the middle.
I think the other thing that I'm thinking of potentially is, I would imagine that you can't cut like a roof gap in the middle. Like that would look not believable, right? But
well, I mean, if you've leapt off the roof,
people
and you cut it in the air.
You
live to post it, I guess.
I guess so. I could see
it's now if you cut the roof gap where it's just the landing.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, but if you jumped off the roof, I mean, you did the jump.
Right.
That's really what people don't watch the roof gap because they're like, oh my gosh, I want to watch him land it. They're like, I just want to see him have, him or her have just the gall to jump off of this thing.
So that's one where there might be an exception. I thought that one wasn't the exception, but I can imagine a zoom being used more too. So I think that you have to be able to be creative with what you got of that original shot as well. I too enjoy it when it's like when you see the full take in some way. What I was trying to advocate for was that I don't care how that's spliced up, as long as it was the original take and that's believable and you tell that story. Like, I think that again, there's different things when you initially are taking pictures. This is like, you know, the farmer with the cell phone or camcorder trying to capture the UFO. There's that I'm just trying to document and prove that this happened, that I saw Sasquatch, right? And I don't care what happens later and what the people have to do to this video to try and prove that it was real. And then there's, I'm trying to create an impression. There's the art of videography there. And I think that's where parkour can really stand out, because you can take a lot of, you know, you can tell the story and try and capture the feeling of what it was like to be there in that moment. It's very hard. I think just singularly, there's a few moments that I've captured on my phone, just like quick drop, right, you know, and record, that have been like that. I have Nate Weston's win in 2015 or whatever, NAPC, from ground level at, like, when everyone just loses it in the crowd. I think that may be one of the few sort of like handheld shots that I would keep and use later on, because you're sort of getting pushed around and you can see that there's energy there. Like, even though that final move or that call was captured, then you have both that moment and the reaction, and it feels very gritty and real. Those are some of the exceptions as to where I think it's fine just to pull out the camera and record it. However,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's another good tip, is that there are moments where it's always better to err on the side of having it recorded,
yes,
crappy or not,
yes,
than it is to try and spend the effort getting it so perfect and being like, oh, well, yeah, I can't film that because I don't have the gimbal, or, you know, like, or I don't want to go through the effort of setting up the tripod and getting all these things, right? You'd be like, fine, then just have somebody just hold the freaking phone, you know, or prop it up against a rock or something like that, right? But sometimes just getting the clip matters. And don't get so hung up on it having to always be this big production thing. Every time you do something, sometimes it's okay to just whip it out and film. And
oftentimes it just won't get filmed if your standard is so high.
It's true. Yeah. And because you'll be like, I'm not going to do that right now. Or I'll wait till somebody comes by, or that person's not in the mood, or that person's not available. And then you forget about it. Or you have a job and kids and whatever, right? Life happens. So sometimes it's better
than just filming. Don't miss it. Just don't miss it. I see that with people trying to record the perfect shot. They're trying to do the edit with the shot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, dude,
post-production.
First time someone records for me, no matter what they're doing, within the first couple conversations, I will have to say to them, you leave 3 seconds before and 3 seconds after for B-roll. If you think I'm done, wait 3 seconds. Because I can't tell how many times I've missed cool stuff because somebody thought I was done. And just, I finished it and I had the impulse to do something different that would have made that line better, and lost it
because somebody was trigger finger. Is that
Err
on the side of over recording than under recording. It's super frustrating to be like, all right, I'm gonna do this line, I'm gonna run and hit this jump, and they're like, okay. And then as soon as you like start running and you hit the jump, they hit record like at the jump. So when you watch the clip, you're like already in the air and you're like,
yeah,
what? Or I land something. And then they hit stop. And like, no, like, you know, especially like, it's the worst when you land something, the people around you are like, oh,
there's right?
And you're like, because you stuck it way better than you thought you would have or whatever. And so you jump, right? And that those moments between before and after the line are where you as an athlete get to engage with the audience on the clip, right? That's where they get to know Justin the person, as opposed to just, they see the movements and they see Justin the athlete. Mm-hmm. But before and after the B-roll is where they get to know Justin the person, right? How does Justin start his lines? Maybe he's up there and he's like,
yeah, he's,
and this is like such a raw moment that nobody sees, and he's just like, got his eyes closed, he's like running through the line, he's like, oh, yeah, and the videographer's like, I'm gonna record that. And then he hits a super dope line, and then afterwards he goes right back to
dancing,
right? People are like, oh, that's hilarious, like, that's awesome, this awesome athlete's like also like just playing around and having fun and being goofy. Or maybe Justin's super serious and he's like, he's here putting on his hat, people are like, dang, this guy's real serious. But yeah, like, if they finish a line,
yeah, leave some, so leave the
padding, keep it on them, and then click it.
So leave the padding. I would say, if you have, again, the resource, especially for B-roll, we used to put a lot of emphasis in the past with trying to capture some B-roll, but what I found is that more recently, if I just put a camera on a tripod, because I've been through so many iPhones, and I leave it running, I will catch a lot of good B-roll.
Better B-roll.
Because it's not, you know, you can't force those moments sometimes. And if the camera just happened to have been rolling, then that's good. So I'd say if you're worried about B-roll, don't want, another thing is don't force B-roll. it's really
tacky.
Yeah, it just, it comes across as really like trying too hard and being inauthentic when you're trying to force goofy moments. If you gotta let it flow, and just if it is happening, then whip the camera out, because lots of times it's a mood and the mood just rises up, and then that's when you just turn the camera on, and then so sometimes the cameraman gets excited and they're getting involved in it and they didn't hit record, right? And so you miss opportunities. Yeah. There, that can happen. But I think that if you're trying to get B-roll, which is the non-essential cuts and edits, but tends to represent better the mood of training, tips for that. Tips for B-roll, what you got? Because people love B-roll. I've seen some videos that are literally just B-roll. Yeah. And people release that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll start off with my least favorite B-roll. And I've always hate, I feel like this suggestion's always been given to me after I've completed a line, and it's to run out of the frame of the camera. I think that's the lamest B-roll you could possibly have. And I feel like there was, when we started filming in parkour, there was always this like concept that you had to be running from your one line, even though you may have filmed something in Denver, and then the next thing at Fort Collins, you had to make it look like you ran all the way there to the next line. Yeah, there's
like this continuity of,
right?
Like,
you always had to be running, movement. Like just constantly. And I hated that. It always felt so corny, and it felt very uncreative and unoriginal. And so that type of B-roll, if you wanted to make it look like you're just, you know, running around your whole city and you're just jumping from one campus to the other and you've ran the entire thing, I think that B-roll needs to die.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's a good attempt at telling a story, but it feels like one of those things that people expect you to do in parkour.
Yeah.
Also, you don't have to flip out of everything.
Oh yeah, we talked about, yeah. Flips, they're adjectives, they're not punctuation. They can be punctuation sometimes, like an exclamation, right? Like people do their whole line, and they're like, and then they're here, and then they're here, and then they're doing that, and then they front flip, and that's the end of the line. Or they do like, you know, some big, like one of the, like a triple ABC or something like that, mm-hmm. at the end of their line, right? And it's like, yo, you could have put that in the middle and it would have been cooler. Because what's really cool is, can somebody do these moves with other stuff added to the front and the back of them? That's true mastery, right? Like if you give me enough time, I could absolutely hit a car dub on the spring floor, mm-hmm. but it's not that cool unless I'm like jumping down, I do some other stuff, I do, you know, some stylistic move, and then I do that, and then after I land it, I go right into another move. That's cool, right? And it highlights that movement more than just a singular clip of me grinding on it.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's got to be more storytelling in all
my,
this. Yeah,
my rule has just been, you just need punctuation. So
you say, so you're on the other side of
you
that.
You can have a short sentence, and that's a combo, but your period is something that is maybe an exclamation mark where it's a double. But other times the most impressive part of your sentence is the middle, and the punctuation is just a period where it's mm-hmm. more dance or expression. Like I feel like a butt slap. Maybe that's a question mark about the end of your line. Yeah. But I feel like you need a punctuation. You need it to be like, okay, he's done.
He's done.
He has said his statement, right? Or he's asked his question. So I think it can be a flip, and oftentimes I'll use flips a lot, and I feel like those are exclamations, and where I feel like the line is building up to that. But I do think it takes a more creative person to end with a period, with a more subtle and
still feel like it was strong
style.
Yeah, they're somewhere. Watching it, and they're like, oh, what's going on here? Oh, wow. And in the end, they're like,
And then, yeah, I think the punctuation is, especially when it's subtle with style, it just makes the whole line feel like it has more personality to it than power and impressive, you know, atmosphere.
Can I use artisanal again?
Yes.
Artisan. I still want to go back to artisanal.
But yeah,
you
I think
if you're talking about wells.
Yeah, I think it's a metaphor.
We're talking about parkour from a well. Yeah, you can use.
I think it's very appropriate for you to use artisanal.
So and also when I would see people running in the, like in the pot, when I see people running in lines, yeah, there's somebody outside in like a, with like a forklift just like tearing up the street, just honking.
I can't wait to move.
Can't wait for the new gym. Yeah. You ever have soundproof in the new gym for the studio? So if you guys are always like, oh, those background noises killing me. These guys sound like they're talking in a can of soup with, you know, two people.
We
like, drum
it's because we are talking in a can of soup or a steel building.
Exactly.
Metal manufacturers on the other side.
I would always watch those film like people running out of parkour lines, and I'd just be like, "Where are they going?
I know.
Why are you running?
Because there's and nothing.
It's like full speed. It's sprint.
It's awkward because very, very few people do their actual parkour line at full speed, right?
Yeah.
So they.
I just feel like,
and then you're just like, wait, that's slow it down, and that's it doesn't feel real. Also, to me, I'm like, I know that you didn't run out of that to go do something else cool, or you would have filmed that.
I just feel
I know that you finished that line, and you were like, I'm done.
I think it's ninja. It's like ninja. It was a Ninja Gaiden, right?
Yes.
It's not, yeah. It's like everybody is like. I just feel like early on they're like, I'm doing a parkour video, so everything's gonna be like. And if I don't have that cadence and I'm just like running through the video like a two-dimensional video game, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It's like that's understanding cadence and going from slow to fast to slow to fast and understanding contrast. And I think that in one other big lesson that I would say is that use contrast to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
And contrast means sometimes things are slow and then they get loud. This is why you can never, if you ever have a kid, you're trying to watch a movie when you're not supposed to be at home with your parents, you can never figure the volume out when you're watching movies on your TV. You'll be like, I just turned the volume down and now nothing seemingly crazy is happening, but all of a sudden the volume jumped, and now it's twice what it was before for whatever reason, because they're trying to make a point and they're trying to create build and there's contrast. And out of nowhere, it's just louder, right? That's why you need that.
Yeah, draws attention.
It draws attention.
Mostly in terms of movie, that annoys me.
I hate that.
Let me set the volume at the same level.
Loud noises.
Oh,
Apple TV's got that.
Oh, Apple TV has that.
Wow, that's really sad that we had to do a software patch for that instead of just people not being douchebags when they make the clip.
They're like, they know it works. There's one guy in the back end post who's just like, nope, that's how we do it. I'm like, dude, just turn. Nope.
He's like, you know, at this scene, like when the explosion happens, they're just gonna turn the volume down, right? Yep, this is how we do it.
We're in the theater, but we put this one on film and this one on video, right? It's like there's two mediums.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Which is probably a point that we could cover too. The method in which you film. So for example, I'm in love and I'm a big proponent, and I'll even put money out there that your standard 16:9 video is going to, for most parkour content, is going to be gone unless it's high production quality edits that are going, longer length film on YouTube. Otherwise, vertical video is in. Full screen video matters. It's so much more engaging than the little like box that covers the middle of your phone, because 90% of your viewers are going to be on mobile. So filming in full screen video, I think this is just me. I think that's, you should film 4 out of 5 times vertical video, unless you're planning on making an actual longer length, high production video out of it that then goes on YouTube. And even then, you should make a secondary edit that's vertical full screen video to post on TikTok or Instagram, reels, or even like Instagram TV.
Mm-hmm.
I think, there's a lot of like content producers that I follow that like the video starts like this and then the actual speaker. Now I'm giving tips that I want us to use. Dang it.
That's anyways, fine. Trust me, give all the best advice in the world. No one's going to take it.
And then, and the speaker in there tells you, turn your phone. Or there's some sort of animation that's like, turn your phone. So if you're like this and it's just the clip. So for those of you watching, it's imagine your phone vertical,
right?
And just the square in the middle is the clip. And then there's an animation that says turn your phone, so you turn your phone sideways, and then it's full screen again. But full screen matters, right? So you're paying $1,200 for a phone, use the whole screen.
Think about the medium of consumption is what I think maybe we could also say. And that is, where is this going to get consumed? And also, does it look dated or does it look not dated? Right now, vertical looks less dated. But yeah, it does feel like, well, if I ever wanted to make a nicer edit from this, vertical would be less beneficial to have. There's some truth to that. But the reason that the little tip that Jesse's talking about is because some of those, like when you flip your phone, sometimes it goes landscape into portrait. But in those apps, they don't. So if you turn them sideways, they don't turn the screen anyway. They stay with that format. So you're actually manipulating, that's a feature bug because you're manipulating the way the software works to gain more landscape real estate in your shots.
Yep.
So that could be an option for platforms that you know won't turn. You could, and the other thing is now you've changed the behavior, physical behavior of the viewer. So now they're more inclined to be engaged because now they're holding their phone sideways and they have to watch it because that means for some reason like going back vertical.
Think about it this way too, is if I'm watching something like this in a vertical mode, but it's not full screen media, I still see my notification bar. I still see my home, my home bar if you're on something other than iOS or an older iPhone. And that's prone to distraction that'll pull me out of it. When I turn my phone and go into full screen, my notification bar disappears. All that I see is that content, which means I'm much more likely to get another 30 seconds of engagement in that video. Because now I'm like, okay, well, I turned my phone. I've put some physical action into this. I might as well see where this is going to go. And that's not a guarantee that you're going to rope me in for the whole video, but you're certainly going to get some more out of me. Whereas if it's in vertical, I'm going to watch and I'm out.
It's just honesty too. The majority of media consumption in the future, we all know, is going to be on mobile phones or tablets. They all have that portrait layout. They all are likely to be either sat down and stared for longer form content or held in the hand. I mean, it's honesty, right? And this is the problem. I mean, Instagram is going to have this problem, is where they're going to be forced to move more to their stories and IGTV. And that's going to be portrait.
They're going to have to implement. I think I talked about this before.
Actually. Yeah, we did.
But Instagram's going to have to move to full screen media there. That's the end game for them right now.
The other thing you can do is...
You have free of charge Instagram.
The other thing you can do is maybe leave some padding in on your landscape. So your letterbox shape video. Leave some extra room on the sides in case you have to cut to vertical.
Yep.
You could go for that too. But I still think that's really hard. And then if you're publishing content, use the black space on either end. You can sometimes salvage the video that way. I shoot sometimes that way. But I'm with you. I can make the pack. I can say casual content forevermore. Jesse will be, I will shoot vertical.
Vertical.
Oh, I think that'll be until the phones get a projector for widescreen.
Ooh.
Or just saw a concept where the phone flips, and so.
That's not going to work, dude. That's going to break.
The phone like an arm comes
out? Yeah, I'm sure eventually that we'll go through a trend. But I like the vertical because it does feel like it's, like when it gets to the edge of the screen, it does, again, it makes you feel like you are closer to what you are watching. Yep. It feels like you are more, like that virtual reality effect. But obviously, especially for parkour, the widescreen format fits more in there. So you're able to see more left to right.
That's why you need a wide angle lens. Because trying to film parkour lines in vertical video is rough without a wide angle.
Yeah. You get the 0.5 on the iPhone and you're in vertical, you're going to be okay for the most part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is some cases like when I'm trying to film like some of the really tight like lines, like b-boy lines, or if there's a long run, I have to get super far away and it's kind of obnoxious. But, it's a give and a take. All right. Any final tips on that? You guys want to bring anything else up for if there are some aspiring videographers out there listening and they're going to come shoot for you, and what's your final request for having your videographer, like what more would you want them to know before?
I think I gave all the major ones, but I think it's also, you may disagree with me, I think sometimes it's okay to show up to film and not film and just be like, this just isn't the day. Because, and mostly this applies to the athlete. If the athlete's not...
Oh, you're talking about it just in general, that like cinema theory or videography theory, right? Like if you don't show up and force it.
Yeah, don't force it too hard. There's definitely like where it's like, yo, you need a line and like it's got to be a day. But like if the athlete's not in a mood to film, that energy is visible in the clip.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like if you're, it's in the padding, right? Mm-hmm. The 3 seconds before and after. Like if your athlete doesn't finish a line, I love when I see an athlete finish a big line and they look at the camera and they're like, right, or they're engaging with the audience somehow, playfully, whatever it may be. But well, like when somebody finishes a line, I'm like,
I love that.
You look like a douche.
My favorite example of that is when Dylan basically falls off of a building like 20 feet high, just takes a straight drop, and he just walks off.
That's different, though, because the fun, now that he's alive, was the fall, right?
It's casual. How casual it was.
Yeah, where it's like, if you finish a big line, and then you're like, I hit it, you look just egotistical. It's not fun, right? Like, if that was a big line for you, and that was fun, celebrate with the audience.
Be yeah. Like, in that particular instance, fun. I think he was... That energy that he didn't freak out because of everyone else freaking out. As a viewer, you're freaking out because he just fell, but he was able to keep his calm.
Colin, I need to go find that video. It's just it's amazing, but not like it was. It wasn't 20 stories. It's 20 feet.
20 feet.
20 feet ish. Yeah, that's what we looked at.
Squat. Yeah, my B roll is pick is exact like you're in face zoom, stabilize on. The most dramatic elements that you're filming on and try to like, you know, I don't know what to call that. They're, you have to act like you're like quantum filming. You're attached to that leg or that body part for that half a second, right? Where it's you're swinging. So you're following the hips as someone's swinging, or you're doing a front flip and you're flashing out. So you zoom up on a little on the foot that's sticking out. Stabilize on dramatic elements and get as close as you can. Usually makes them.
Yeah, I'm gonna drop one on TikTok. I think today for the gym that was Jesse and Olaf just doing some basic, single arm brachiation, and they found a nice figure eight pattern around the bar set.
Yeah, it was fun.
And I was playing with just angles and whatnot. I may have done too much of that because it's pretty. It's almost I follow like the hip just continuously through the brachiation, and I think that if you didn't, that accentuates the sort of cursive movement. Where you're moving up and there's loops. If you just hold it and then let people just swing like that, it's just not it's not what it would imagine. You would imagine it would feel like to be doing that movement.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of my advice is try and make it, if you're that good, try and make the viewer feel what it feels like to do the movement.
Yeah.
So if there's a big stick, try and emphasize the impact of the stick of the landing. If there's a flip in there, create some like, you know, vertigo motion, if at all possible, as long as it's not too jarring. If there's an acceleration, you know, starting slow and then picking up your cadence can help the viewer understand what was hard about this. I like that with tacks. I've tried to experiment with shooting some of that with tacks, where it's like there's a run up, and then what I think is great about catbacks and tacks are like the loft that you get, because the energy isn't like lasering into the ground. It's like someone just like popped you up. Yep. Pop. So I've been trying to get some like, you know, shoot in a little tighter. So punch in with the camera. And then after they tack, it's like straightforward punch, and then let the arm arc up as they go through to emphasize that the energy is direct and then an arc, like a basketball, like three, just like shooting and like that nice, like, right.
Pippity pap.
For skibbity paps, I think you'd want like that, like left, right, left or something, right? Like if someone's doing tacks, you might have skibbity tacks. Skip, tap, tap, left, right, left, right? You might have a left, right, left motion there. But just think about that when you do it. Like, what does it feel like to be an athlete? Another reason why you need an athlete shooting.
Yep.
Because they get it. Other people are like, well, what's happening there? Oh, you jumped. That was cool. Like, an athlete's going to get that was the scary part, even though it's subtle, right?
That's true.
And then what?
I was going to explain the inside joke that Travis often uses
skibbity paps.
What are those called?
Onomatopoeias?
Yeah, there we go.
Onomatopoeias.
To explain subjects that he doesn't quite have the words for.
Right.
So he'd be like, yeah, you know, so we were like doing that thing and we were like, I'm like, typing? Yep, that's the one.
It's so true. I think that happens too when you start like, when you've been talking in one language and then switch to the other language a lot, you forget the earlier, like, if anybody's ever traveled abroad and spoken a different language, you'd be like, my English was terrible after I came back from, you know, France or China or, you know, the coffee bar. Yes.
So, anyways, lots of good tips in this one for videographers and athletes looking to produce content. So maybe we can, Colin, can you tabulize those for us so that they're bullet points nice and easy for us? Because I know we jumped topics, but I think we did pretty good.
I got some good tips. Like, I'd want most of the crew to listen to this and be like,
I wish I had listened to this
before 5 years ago. Oh, yeah. It's pretty valuable, I think. And if you guys have questions about, like, or you want us to review and give feedback on your content, just shout out, just tag us and be like, hey, take a look. you know, at Outrun Parkour on social or any of our individual tags, which we should probably organize. So, yeah.
Anyways, thanks for tuning in, guys. If you're watching us, you can listen to us on Apple or Spotify or any other major podcasts. If you're listening to us, you can watch us on YouTube and Facebook.
Right? Facebook, now, yeah, we put some content on Facebook.
We're on Facebook too. So you can watch our pretty faces, and you can also see Travis's gesticulations as he makes his sounds. Is it sounds? So thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll catch you next time.
All right, bye.